Hi, it's Jim Bakei. This is my podcast, Be You, The World Will Adjust. And as I said in the last one, seems like we're doing all the adjusting. And the earth is angry, my friend, as my good friend George Costanza said. Okay, so what now? You've experienced the improbable. And so far, we've all have achieved the impossible. Governments have shut down the worldwide economy. And that was just a month ago. Wow. 5 weeks ago, there was nobody that could have predicted this. People were sort of like talking about Wuhan, shutting down the town. But, you know, it's kind of like that was over there, right? It wasn't here. And as you all know, everyone has great ability to block out what's going on in the rest of the world and other people's lives, as long as it doesn't affect them. But then when it does, we've completely changed how we go about our personal and professional lives on a dime. Unfortunately, work-wise, millions have lost their jobs and are staring at a blank future. Millions are working from home and surprisingly are being quite productive. And what's really interesting, you know, sort of listening to the different people on TV that talk about their companies, it's a real earth-shattering revelation at how successful it's actually working. How I watched CEO of Morgan Stanley, James Gorman, who talked about they have 90% of their employees at home. 90% of their employees at home. Think about how much real estate that encapsulates. Think about the impact of that, even if half of those people don't come back to the organization, to those people, figuring out how to maintain a culture. I mean, you know, talk about jettisoning into the future, literally overnight, it's quite remarkable. And I would suspect that, you know, when people start thinking about, okay, so how do we transition next? There'll be sort of three groups of people. There'll be those that'll go, hey, I'm good. Leave me at home. I'm quite productive. I'll pass on the commute and I'll just keep working from here. The second group will be, no, I want to go to the office. I can't stay here. I don't want to be at home with my kid, my husband, my wife, my parents, whatever it is. And I think the third group, which is probably not being focused on right now, is the group that'll be traumatized. That group will want to go back, but they'll be afraid to go back. So that'll be, I'll leave that one for now, but something to think about. And that'll be a strain on our continuing services, particularly for mental health care and anxieties and things like that. But there will be a group of people that, you know, I know myself, it's not that, you know, I don't want to go back to be in public, but I don't want to go back, you know, like, I'm not sure I'll go to a hockey game. I'm not sure I'll go to a football game right now. It's going to take me some time to re-engage. So the real thing that I was thinking about in the last couple of days as I was preparing this is not just our work, but how our daily routines have been completely overturned and, you know, sort of tossed all over the place. You know, the simplest acts of dressing for work, commuting, interacting with colleagues and friends, our rituals of coffee, lunch, smoke breaks with friends and colleagues is gone in a blink of an eye. As we all know, because we're raised in routines of school, raised in routines of health habits, raised in routines of vacations, raised in routines of work and routine. The world runs on routines. Routines are good. I know it's hard to believe that I would say that, but routines are good. How do we know what our new routines will be, especially if we don't go back to our work? Our lives are built around our schedules, where we have to be for work, for family, and for friends. All of that has been suspended. Taken away. All of that time, we're now trying to figure out, like, okay, so I normally get up at 5:30 to go to work. It takes me an hour to get clean, have some breakfast, get on the GO train, get on the transit, get on whatever. I get to the office. I usually have a Starbucks. Boom, 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 boom. Whoosh, gone. I now wake up in my home. It's like Groundhog Day. Every day seems like the same one as yesterday. I have to force myself to make a schedule. I have to force myself to make more outgoing calls because there are not a lot of incoming calls in. And I have to force myself to build connections with people. My own children, instead of phoning them like I used to do, I now FaceTime them every day. Two are in Toronto, one's in London. It's a different format. It's a different part of the schedule. So, you know, along with suspension of all that schedule, I suspect, so of all the complaints about, oh my God, I'm overbooked, I'm stressed with all the running around with the kids' sports, school events, family functions, gone. So what do we replace that with, right? I read a funny story the other day about judges, because a lot of the court cases are going forward. They're all being Zoomed, talking about how upset they are because the lawyers are showing up in pajamas on the Zoom, and some even in bed, you know. Has this social distancing and quarantining and working from home given us a license to abandon all of the things that were part of our professional life? You know, I'm probably as equal to blame for this in that, you know, as you know, because I'm doing my podcast from Florida, for the last 30 days, I get up in the morning, I throw a bathing suit on, a t-shirt, and my flip-flops. I kind of pound around and come to the phone, and when I do a Zoom call or a video conference, I go back in and I put a shirt on, but I'm sitting there in my bathing suit. And even if I was in Toronto on a normal work day, I get up and I get dressed. I put my work clothes on. I get myself organized. The improved technology, and I suspect about to get even better in video conferencing, is what has enabled us to all stay connected. Work, family, and friends. I play Texas Hold'em poker with my son and a bunch of his friends every second night. Not because I need to play cards, but allows me to see and interact with others while having the same joy as if I was there chirping everybody in the game. What's the upside? The added benefit is, unlike when we play in person and after I lose my stack, I can just disconnect and retreat to my room. If we were in person, I'd probably hang around, have a couple more beers, and watch the winners take away with my money. This morning, my wife and her numerous cousins, my wife is one of eight kids, they were on a video conferencing call. Whereas in prior times, they would have seen each other. They're mostly in Chicago at Thanksgiving. They'd have rushed a year of stories in those 3 days. But now they can keep abreast of everything that's going on a much more frequent basis. So the challenge is, and every day it's a new challenge. And that's what's really interesting to me is that there's no way to predict tomorrow what you're going to think about that you didn't think about today. I woke up at 4:30 in the morning this morning and this podcast came to me. I didn't really know what I was going to talk about today. Building routines to make up for the ones we lost is really about trial and error and following your instincts to want to stay connected. Be open-minded. The other thing that I'm really, really enjoying is there seems to be a huge spike in empathy, sympathy, and just a willingness to cut each other a little more slack. You know, we all work, you know, in the old days, which we now can say was 5 weeks ago, there were tons of petty career and business games being played that somehow have lost their relevance or at least been shelved for a period of time. It's amazing what a crisis can make people do to come together to fight a common enemy. But we must be mindful of the fact that while the enemy here is the virus, there are numerous cause and effects that fall out from fighting the virus. And those are constantly changing and we can't predict them. The first few weeks of this situation, everybody was drinking from a fire hose. Control, panic, fear, and instinct reactions prevailed. Now we find ourselves breathing a little easier, but still not with full confidence. I'm not sure we'll ever have full confidence. I just noticed this morning that the PGA is the first of the sporting teams to sort of dip their toe in the water, and they said the PGA championship will be played on June the 8th, and it will be played without fans. They haven't expanded upon whether people will be wearing masks, whether the caddies will be wearing gloves, what the situation is, But we're starting to see the first attempts. Governors, mayors are talking about possibility of allowing some leeway, but it's not consistent. And this lull in the storm that we're seeing is just that. And we don't know if the storm is completely passed. And we don't know what the next shoe to drop, or really what to do now. And everybody's asking the same question. There's never been a period of time where everybody is in the exact same spot. Nobody actually knows. I know I've said it before, and I want to remind people constantly, countless numbers of companies and businesses are all asking the same question. They're all sort of thinking, okay, like, how do I get back engaged as a human being into my daily routine, as an employee into my business? What is my business going to look like? Am I going to go back to the office? And this concept, somebody said to me the other day, well, you know, we got to think about getting people back to work. I'm like, well, people that are working from home are still working. I'm still working. Just happens to be from home. There are a lot of people that are not working. But when you're talking about the people that in large corporations that have been sent home to work from home, they have been working. And so part of this process of figuring it all out, you know, is really about the data, right? It's going to be about surveying people. It's going to be about talking to people. It's going to be about, you know, the 9,000 call center workers that I've spoken about before, asking those people, okay, so how many of you want to stay home? How many of you like staying home? How many of you like doing it, right? How will that change? You know, it changes the dynamics of how you hire as an organization, as opposed to needing, you know, 9,000 call center workers all living in Montreal or Halifax or Toronto or Mississauga. You can now hire these people from across the country if they're going to work. You could actually hire students. What about stay-at-home moms or stay-at-home dads? It could be the Uber of employment on demand. So I say, you know what? I want to take my kids to school from 7 to 8, and then I'm free from 8 to 12 every day. I could take calls. I don't need to work 8 to 5. I could take calls. What if I'm a student? And of course, you know, you have to certify that everybody can get the job done, that they're qualified and all of those things. But let's assume you do that. You know, part-time workers. Someone says, yeah, no, I'd love to work every evening, or I'd love to work every morning. Or what about the people, you know, like my wife, to get up at 4:30 in the morning, go for a run and kind of sit around and wait for the rest of us? It's just mind-boggling, the combinations and permutations of how the world could change. And the only thing that will get in the way of that is if people start thinking about going back to the way it was and are not asking the question about how can it be. I had a conversation with one of my clients yesterday, and she was telling me that she was involved in a conversation talking about the number of people that were going to work from home, talking about you know, the fact that that would free up real estate, and then talking about the fact that, you know, they would have to figure out how to get the real estate off, whether it be go back and negotiate with the client, the real estate client or someone. And someone said to her, well, that won't work. And I was like, how do they know? They don't know that. Nobody can make that statement. Nobody can say that won't work anymore. And God knows, I'm 66 years old. And I've spent my life dealing with people that have said to me, that won't work. And it's so beautiful to be at a time when I can say, you don't know that that won't work, do you? You're the same person that a month ago, if I'd said to you, we're going to send 9,000 call center workers home, you'd have said to me, well, that won't work. We can't do that. It's awesome. Because there is no such thing as that won't work. How it will work is the more important question. What will be the impact? Not just professionally and getting the business done, but what's the social impact? How do you create a community as an organization when you don't have a central place to go? Now, people that work from home will tell you that they still maintain a community. And so maybe it's not a function of how do you maintain a community? Maybe it's redefining what a community looks like. A community has historically been a place where everybody goes, shared experiences, shared everything. But maybe the community of the future looks different. Well, not maybe. It's going to look different, right? It's going to look totally different. So we need to expand our minds. We need to remove that immediate reaction that 90% of the population has when a new idea comes forward or something different comes forward. And someone always says, well, that's not going to work. Oh, that'll never work. That'll never happen. Could you imagine? I'm sure you all read the story about Wimbledon had been paying £1.6 million a year in insurance costs in anticipation of a major thing like pandemic or something like that, where they would have to close the Wimbledon tennis. I would just have loved to have been at the board meeting every single year when that line budget came up. And somebody said, seriously, we're going to spend another $1.6 million on this? Seriously? Every year. I'm sure every year. And I'm sure that CEO of the All England Lawn and Tennis Club probably heard about it every single year. Well, guess what? Just paid off to the tune of £134 million. Not looking so stupid now, right? Not looking so stupid now. Got to expand our minds. We've got to push out the pieces in our mind. Our natural instinct, and you know it, because when someone comes up with a new idea, and God knows I've spent a lifetime of this, the people can barely wait for you to finish the idea before it's on their lips. They go, oh, no, you can't do that. You can't do that. There's nobody knows what you can, you can't do. And then the second part is, if you're in a company, you're going to have bias at the top. You're going to have bias of your history of knowledge. And you got to tap down into the young organization. You got to get into that next generation, the generation of those people. And you got to ask them to go out and think about the ideas. Because you don't know what you don't know. They don't know what they don't know, but they're not afraid to ask the questions. They're not afraid to look at it differently. So the last thing I'll leave you with is, if you're a worker, if you're just at home, if you're out of work, you've got to really think about broadly, what am I going to do next? One foot at a time. How am I going to improve my day-to-day life? How am I going to create some routine? How am I going to create some process? I've been upended. It's as if I've been dropped on a desert island and I've got to figure it out. I've got to figure out whether I like what I'm doing and don't like what I'm doing. I got to figure out whether, yeah, I could live with this. I could live at home. Maybe there's other things on how to improve living at home and doing the job. Got to figure out, one of the things I've suggested to people is, what if all those contact center people were contract workers? Remember when all the technology people about 15, 20 years ago used to work within organizations, and the next thing they did is they shuttled them off all off to contract workers? And the next thing they did is they built these technology centers all around the world. Access to human capital will change dramatically. Organizations' abilities to hire people in Regina and Temuscami and South Dakota and everywhere else will not be driven by real estate. Real estate has driven many of decisions. You want to work on Wall Street, you got to live in New York. You want to work on Bay Street, you got to live in Toronto. You want to be in the oil and gas business, you got to live in Calgary. Really? Does that still apply? So, my last challenge, same one as I was just talking about, force yourself to think differently. Force yourself to think outside the box and allow yourself that you have no bad ideas. Explore them. Pull the thread on the sweater. See how far it goes. My name's Jim Bakiai, be you, the world will adjust, and the be you that I want you to be is that creative, open-minded, challenging individual. Good luck, stay safe, and I'll talk to you in a week.